You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network as the countdown to Super Bowl 51 continues. We're going to send it to Las Vegas and Nevada where the props are set to be released this evening. Ted Savransky, a.k.a. Teddy Covers, will join us. And we're all about the Teds on the program today. Ted Savransky joins us, three-time Super Bowl champion. Teddy Johnson joins us as well, former New England Patriot standout, part of that great defense, along with Teddy Bruschi, along with Mike Vrabel. Ted Johnson steps up and in and joins us on the program. We'll talk some NBA basketball. It's been a crazy week in the association. I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, actually, in which we're at the time of the year right now. Players are getting tired, especially the big-time teams. You know, they've got a bigger picture that they're looking at. Similar situation in college. We're seeing a lot of big-time, top-ranked college teams get knocked off their perch over the last couple of weeks. You know, we have the dog days of summer. We're kind of in the dog days of basketball right now as well. We're going to talk basketball. So LeBron James is getting pissed off, and he's probably even more upset after they actually lost to the Sacramento Kings. 12-point underdogs went outright. That's the type of week it's been in the association. It's been a lot of upsets this week. Coach Nick, one of the best in the business, B-Ball Breakdown, will join us. We're talking a little bit of everything on the program today. You know, and what we haven't talked about and what nobody seems to be talking about is what I'm going to talk about right now to open up the program. As, you know, it's the calm before the storm right now in the sports world. And we're all sort of preparing for that storm after the Super Bowl. And the Super Bowl is often a letdown. This year's game will probably be pretty entertaining. But you know, once the Super Bowl's done, what's up next? March Madness. You know, March Madness, even the conference tournaments don't really mean anything unless you're a bubble, you're a team that's on the bubble. You look at the NBA right now, and I've said this for years, and you notice the pattern all the time. Players will rev it up pre-All-Star vote. Pre-All-Star game. Once the All-Star rosters are announced in the NBA, it's like, all right, well, hey, you know, when's this break getting here anyways? And that's where we're at right now in the NBA. The NHL, we give NHL players credit. These guys play hard every night. But the season's so freaking long. The games are kind of boring. And the best part of the National Hockey League is the playoffs, which leads me to the Australian Open. And I totally get it that not everybody's into tennis. You know, tennis isn't as big as it used to be. Similar to boxing, because there's not an American dominance like there used to be. But, you know, isn't there? As the last time I checked, Serena Williams was an American. And it's amazing to me that Venus Williams becomes the player to go with the longest gap in between Grand Slam finals since the mid-90s when Martina Navratilova did it. Basically is, you know, a bottom-of-the-page headline under the fact that Johnny Manziel deleted his Twitter account. You know, like, really? Serena Williams is facing Venus Williams in the Australian Open final. If Serena Williams wins to record-breaking 23rd freaking Grand Slam championship, like, how come Serena Williams isn't one of the most popular athletes in America? How come Serena Williams isn't even the most popular athlete in freaking tennis? Like, you know, last time I checked, I don't see Serena Williams on television commercials. I see Eugenie Bouchard on television commercials. Like, Eugenie Bouchard is, you know, gets like, you know, a multi-million-dollar television shampoo deal because she successfully returned to serve once. Oh, yeah, lawyer, she's great. Look at her. She's the next big thing. They put her on like the cover of the New Yorker and stuff. Tennis's next big thing. Yeah, we're still waiting. We're still waiting. People care more about Maria Sharapova than they do about Serena Williams. And, you know, it's amazing. Like, Serena Williams' reputation, oh, she's angry. She, you know, she yells at people. Yeah, because Tom Brady never yells at a referee, right? LeBron James never yells at a referee. LeBron James is called the king, all right? He's called the freaking king. Last week, people were comparing Aaron Rodgers to Babe Ruth. Tom Brady is being compared to God himself. Yet here you have Serena Williams. She's about to win her 23rd freaking Grand Slam championship. Oh, well, yeah, you know, we'll put that at the bottom of the page. Yet, you know, let's be real. You know, I don't want to bring race into this, but I'm going to bring race into this. And you know, if you really want to be honest about this, unless you're into alternative facts and you actually think there was more people at Trump's inauguration, right? You believe in like the alternative fact world, period. But let's be real. Every blonde like chick that can like successfully return a serve or maybe even win some minor tournament somewhere is the next greatest thing. Makes multi-million dollars in sponsorship deals. You know, here we have Serena Williams, the greatest female tennis player of all time. And, you know, what people would rather talk about, I don't know, anything besides the fact that Serena Williams is as good as she is. And don't tell me that if she looked like Eugenie Bouchard and she won 23 grand freaking slam championships, that people wouldn't be saying she's the greatest athlete of all time. Can you imagine if there was like two blonde chick sisters that were playing and one of them's won 22 times and the other one's won 7 times and they're playing in the finals? No, I'm pretty sure it would be a bigger story than it freaking is. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions continues on the Fantasy Sports Network. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we got a great show lined up for you today. And hosts always say that, but we actually mean it. We're sending it to Las Vegas. Ted Savransky is going to join us. We're sending it to Houston, Texas, where Ted Johnson is going to join us. And that Ted Johnson, the 3-time Super Bowl champion, Ted Johnson, with the New England Patriots, Ted Johnson. It's pretty crazy. He's actually a radio host in Houston, Texas. And of course, the last time the Super Bowl was in Houston, the Patriots won the Super Bowl and Ted Johnson was on that football team. So I look forward to getting Ted's take on the Super Bowl. We're getting Ted and Ted's take on the Super Bowl today. Although we're not locking in Savransky with any picks today. We're kicking the tires and we'll talk some NBA basketball with Coach Nick, B-ball breakdown. So let's send it to Vegas. Ted Savransky, what up, Teddy?
Morenci, what's a good word today, sir?
It's always a pleasure. I always look forward to talking to you. Teddy, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Yourself?
One day at a time.
I hear you're avoiding Vegas for Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, I'm banned, I think. No, all kidding aside, yeah, I'm not avoiding it. I'd like to be there. Although it is kind of a circus, isn't it, Super Bowl? Super Bowl Sunday in Vegas, kind of a circus. It's fun if you win. It sucks if you lose.
it sure does. And again, you know, I'm jaded now. I've been in Vegas since 1998. The first 5 years I was out here, Super Bowl was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
I mean, ever. You know, there's parties everywhere. There's a million people in town. It can take you an hour to get to the betting window to get your wager down on game day.
But, I don't like that.
You know, it's something of a zoo. But it's a lot of fun. Obviously, as you've been here longer, you've done it before. It doesn't have the same type of excitement level that I used to have. But it's still the Super Bowl, man. It's Christmas for sports bettors.
No, and you can't, you know, even if you're old and jaded and bitter and hate the world like I do and jaded, it is, the atmosphere in a sports book in a casino during a Super Bowl is second to none, Teddy.
Like, second to none. Better than being at the game.
There's so much freaking tension, man, like with half the room and the other half of the room. And you know what I just don't like? It's like the long flight home. You live there. It's one thing, Teddy, like, you know, all right, it sucked. I lost the Super Bowl and I crossed the street and I went to the condo, right? I went back home to Allure and, you know, that was that. But last year, man, it was worse. Like, I had a longer flight home than the Panthers did. So, I'm just sitting there on the plane thinking about all the things I did wrong. It's pretty painful, Teddy.
Yeah, trying to scrape up enough money to buy a drink on the way home because there aren't a whole lot of people, especially considering the Super Bowl that you had last. I mean, my Super Bowl wasn't any good last year either.
Right.
It wasn't like you're going home with a ton of money in your pocket. You're like, how do I scrape together enough to, tip the guy to?
Yeah, brutal. Brutal. It didn't help. I missed my plane too after the game, but that's besides the point. Well, it's funny, Teddy, because honestly, I said about halfway through the year this year that Atlanta reminds me of Carolina last year. And we see the NFC South, all of them been to the Super Bowl over the last like 12 years or so. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't surprise me when these teams from the South get really hot and they go on these runs. Carolina couldn't handle the moment. From a football perspective, I think you can make a legitimate argument that the Atlanta Falcons can win this football game. But from a broader picture, You know, I wonder how they're going to handle the pressure of the Super Bowl, Teddy. And I'm not worried. I'm not talking about Matt Ryan. I'm not talking about Julio Jones. I think they'll handle the pressure well. But we're talking about five starters on the defensive side of the football that are either first or second year starters, Teddy. And they're enthusiastic kids. And sometimes that enthusiasm can work against you Super Bowl week.
It can, though. I mean, to be honest, once the guns, goes off and they sing the national anthem and they kick off, it's football. The jitters and the butterflies tend to go away in those situations. What you don't want is a quarterback that's got jitters and butterflies. And I don't think that that's the situation for Matt Ryan. He's played in enough big games. He's played in enough playoff games. And he's played well in enough playoff games that it's not a significant concern for me. But you talk about that Falcons defense. And to me, the Falcons defense is the biggest X factor in this Super Bowl. You look at the season-long stats, they're not very good. They struggled particularly against power rushing games. That's something that, New England can do everything, but the one thing that the Patriots could do, they want to run Blount and Lewis, they can do that for four quarters. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots start with that type of a game plan, trying to pound Atlanta on the ground, because, again, the stats show that was their biggest weakness during the regular season. But you look at the Falcons in the playoffs, and, again, you talked about it, five either first or second-year players starting in the back seven on defense. And we're talking about a group of guys who have legitimately gotten better as the season has progressed. You look at Atlanta stats from their two playoff games, not comparable to what we saw during the regular season when this defense was getting pushed around. So the question is the Falcons defense that we've seen down the stretch in the last couple of games, is that really Atlanta's defense? Or is a full season statistical profile and the fact they're going up against Tom Brady and an extraordinarily versatile offense, is that the real Falcons defense? To me, that's where the entire handicap comes from.
Yeah, we were talking with Brian Finneran earlier in the week, former Falcon, and he does a radio show in Atlanta now, and he said that Dan Quinn has a saying that the Falcons defense uses, arrive violently. And if you saw last week, they did. They're getting to the quarterback and they're aggressive. They're like an SEC team or something. Like, they're getting there, they're flying around. And I noticed too, even I saw the kid on the Falcons put his helmet right into Rodgers' shoulder. And I'm thinking, that's not by accident. Like, they're taught this. Like, it was like a missile. And it was like, no, I'm going to go where I could possibly hurt him the most. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not looking for the highlight reel. I'm looking to hurt him. And, bang. They get you. But you brought up something here, and I agree. I've been saying this all week, actually. I expect the New England Patriots to try to exploit the one weakness the Falcons do have, because the Falcons have athletes. They're getting after the quarterback. We know this. They have an athletic defensive backfield as well. But as you mentioned, Teddy, their one somewhat weakness is the power run game. They are a little bit vulnerable to this. I think there'll be a heavy dose of LeGarrette Blount, and also Belichick is the master of going, attacking your weakness and taking your strength away. Their weakness, run defense. Their strength, their offense. And, they sort of go hand in hand, which means, what about this total, Teddy? If the Patriots are going to try to chew some clock up, then does this bite into this total?
My first initial gut reaction on the total was, oh, my God, I got to bet this over. And then, as I started doing work on it, I'm like, oh, my God, I got to bet this under. And then
people are like with me, Teddy. They're like, oh, Morenci. Because I always bet overs. Oh, Morenci, you must love the over. I'm like, I don't know. And I bring it up all the time. The last time, the second highest total was 57.5 7 years ago with the Saints and the Colts. 31-17 final score, never threatened.
Exactly. And that's a big concern for me here. Okay. But when I say my first reaction was to look, literally the first reaction was that this is an over matchup. I'm like, we have Brady and Ryan. You have elite pass catchers. You have dynamic offenses. Yeah. You have defenses that aren't as good as the offenses. And my gut is, oh, my God. At 57, okay, I can get over. 58, I can get over. Then you start to think about the nuances and the fact that here's New England. What's the Patriots' game plan got to be? They have to keep Atlanta's offense off the field. And they're capable of doing that if they run the football. That's not a game plan for overs. keep the Falcons' offense off the field, run the football, burn clock. That's a nightmare.
And even their controlled passing game, which is really like a running game with Brady, it's the same thing, right? Like, exactly. Belichick's not thinking, guys? I think I want to win this game 45-44. Let's go there and trade points with them.
Not a chance. But the other thing that I've been reading is that both coaches are going to do a lot of no huddle. You know, and this is something I want to do a little bit more work on. But, well, you know, the Falcons talk about how their offense is so much better when they play at pace.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of quotes saying, pace, pace, we got to push the pace, we want to push the tempo. That's concerning, especially because New England is very capable of doing the exact same thing. So the one thing you don't want is an underbet in which both teams are going to gun the whole way down the field. And, you know, the play clock's never going to hit 10 seconds. They're going to be snapping with 15 and 20 seconds over and over again. That's a disaster for underbettors. So it's not an easy game. They rarely are. Every once in a while, you get a Super Bowl that stands out.
I got to believe it's over or pass. It's hard to take the under, but it could happen, you know? All right, Teddy. So the props, Teddy, Ted Sofransky's in Vegas, obviously. Jay Cornegay is releasing a prop tonight at the Westgate Thursday night. So we'll be able to talk some props next week, and we'll lock you in for a couple of picks for the Super Bowl. A couple of things that drive me crazy, Teddy, and I know that they do with you as well, is when you hear announcers say what an upset is because a higher-ranked team loses. And, you know, I've seen this a couple of times over the last week and a half or so. And, Creighton are upset. And, this is an upset. Oh, Kansas, West Virginia upset Kansas. You know, they upset them. They're a four-point favorites, jackass. Like, it's not an upset. They were favored to win the game. I don't care what your little number beside the team says. And another thing that drives me crazy, and I've seen this all over the internet today. Oh, Vegas says it'll be a long national anthem. Vegas ain't saying nothing about the national anthem. Like, I'm seeing Vegas sets the national anthem number at 2 minutes. And I'm thinking, Vegas didn't set the national anthem number at 2 minutes. You can't bet the national anthem in Vegas.
Okay. Both of your points are 100% valid. All right. Now, the whole concept of Vegas says. You and I have been bettors for a long time. We're familiar with the jargon. We're familiar with the lingo. We understand the nuances.
Yeah.
Nobody out there in mainstream America seems to understand that. Certainly not when you're talking about non-sports bettors. So when they say Vegas says, all that means is that's what the line is. You know, this line is, literally, it's one of those things that it can make you crazy. Don't let it make you crazy.
No, I'm not going to go crazy about it. You know, it's funny you have Vegas numbers. I remember me and T-Bone walked into the M, okay? We walked into the M, and there's UFC, and they only had like 2-3 fights up. So I said, hey, where are the prelims? What's going on? Like, what about the rest of the card? He's like, okay, hold on. And he's like, what fights do you want to bet anyway? So I started rattling off some fights. We see him go to a computer. He goes to bet Chris. He calls his buddy over. And they're like, and I hear him say, add 5 cents. They come back. There's your Vegas number, all right?
quite literally. I mean, you nailed it right there.
It's the exception with Cornegay tonight, though. He really does make these props, though.
Oh, my God. I mean, the amount of work that the Superbook staff puts in on these props is unreal.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for us, the props have gotten better and better and better. You know, for a decade plus, you go down on a Thursday night to the Superbook, and there was a stack of wise guys, you know, out the door, and lines getting pop, 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 pop. I was down there last year, and the biggest movers were like obscure defensive players' tackles.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just
because that's where they think the value is. Exactly.
Well, the lines have gotten better.
And especially with this, and I talked about this with Lawrence earlier in the week, with the total being so high, a lot of these props are going to be high, man. It's going to be tough. Like Julio Jones, 7.5 catches. Matt Ryan, 314 yards. Like, nothing's going to be easy, and it's going to tempt you to want to take the unders. But we've only got a couple of minutes, so let's talk about some basketball tonight. Our Michigan Wolverines, Teddy. I think it's safe to say we're a bubble team. Need to rack up some consistent wins. Nearly knocked off Wisconsin. They've won 2 of 3 yet. I'm not too comfortable with the 4 points tonight against the Hoosiers. What's your take?
Me neither. You know, I look at Michigan, and Michigan is so well coached. They never beat themselves, but they're not good enough to beat good teams.
Yeah.
You know, and the good teams are knocking them off. And obviously Indiana, with the injury issues that they've had over the last couple of weeks, key losses for the Hoosiers. Not the same team now as they were 2 or 3 weeks ago. They had a big issue in terms of depth, even in knocking off Michigan State. Last weekend, Indiana ran out of gas late. The starters played, close to 160 minutes out of the 200 overall minutes. And that worries me here. They did win in Ann Arbor last year. And Michigan, you know, the two statistical weaknesses that stand out, they're bad defending the three-point line and they're bad on the offensive glass. And those are two things that Indiana can exploit. So slightest of leans here towards the Hoosiers. No interest in laying 3.5, 4 with the Wolverines.
What's your take on the big Pac-12 matchup this evening with the Ducks and the Utes? The Utes are a team that, especially on the East Coast and in the Midwest, etc., they don't get a lot of attention. They don't get a lot of attention anywhere ever, actually. You know, but they're a pretty solid basketball team. They're 17-2.
They sure are. The issue, of course, is that Dana Altman's squad is not an easy team for me to bet against. And I know they've had it relatively easy schedule-wise. They have. I mean, they've had their only road trip so far in Pac-10 play was to go play the two Washington schools, neither of which is particularly good this season. They've had a very friendly schedule. They have been dominating everyone. And they've also dominated Utah in every recent meeting. It hasn't even been close. You know, sometimes you have these series and one of the two teams, they come away with a bunch of wins, but fluky endings, tight results. Not this series. Oregon has owned Utah, and until the Utes show me they can beat the Ducks, I can only look at Oregon. Plus, you know, and there's been Oregon money so far today. Last though was +1. Oregon's the better of these two teams. I won't bet against them as an underdog.
Yeah, we got 30 seconds, and it's interesting because Xavier's beaten Cincinnati 3 times in a row. Seems like it's a big-ass revenge spot for the Bearcats tonight.
It sure is. But, of course, the guys, you know, since he's not only got to win, they have to win by margin.
Yeah, I know. That's what concerns me.
And they're not easy for Cincinnati to do.
They're not an explosive offensive team. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to be a battle in that one, too. All right, Teddy, it's always a pleasure, my man. We'll talk next week, and we'll nail some props. I'll put you in the hot seat. Come ready with a couple of props.
I'm looking forward to it, Gabe. Best of luck, buddy.
There's Teddy Covers with us. We take a quick break, and another Teddy joins us. 3-time Super Bowl champion, Teddy Johnson, up next. Game Time Decisions. We are live on the Fantasy Sports Network. I'm fired up to welcome a 3-time Super Bowl champion to the program. And it's amazing to me that Ted Johnson right now actually does daily radio in Houston, Texas, because, of course, the last time the Super Bowl was in Houston, the New England Patriots beat the Carolina Panthers. And that actually was my first Super Bowl. It was my second year in the business. And I remember I went down and we were in the media row and all that type of stuff. And we spoke to Teddy Bruschi and Johnson, and we had a one-on-one with Mike Vrabel. And all these guys are retired right now, but Brady's still playing. It's crazy. Teddy Johnson steps up in it and joins us. Ted, welcome to the program, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate you having me on. And it's crazy to think that Mike Vrabel, my former teammate, he's running his own ship now, the defensive coordinator down here in Houston. He'll be a head coach someday. But it's great to see a lot of my former teammates doing so well, either in the coaching profession, but in the media profession. It's really cool.
Yeah, Mike's a real cool dude, man. He was a real cool guy. Like I said, I was actually there in Houston, Texas. So it's amazing. Like, how do you end up in Houston right now? Now you got the Pats coming to town. How does this happen?
Just a real quick Reader's Digest version of my kind of, where I'm from. I'm from two places. I'm from Houston, Texas here. I lived here for half my life, and the other half was in San Diego, California, where I went to high school. And then but my dad always lived here, and I was screwing up my life in Boston. I retired from the Patriots in 2005, and then I had a lot of issues, personal issues that I was struggling with. And so I needed to basically remove myself from a city that really just wasn't healthy for me anymore. So I came back down here in the South. I'm a Texan at heart. You know, I have Southern sensibilities. And so I came down here. My parents, owned a barbecue restaurant for 30 years, helped them kind of reopen that, and then just fell into the radio business. And so, I didn't go to high school here. I didn't play for the pro team, Texans here. I'm a Patriot, former Patriot. But people seem to accept me. That was winning 3 Super Bowls and playing for Belichick and with Tom Brady, that gets me a lot of street cred here. So I'm very appreciative of the fans. The listeners here, they kind of accept me as one of their own.
Well, they respect football, and they respect tough football players like you were, and I'm glad to hear, and I've heard, how well you're doing. Obviously, doing a daily radio show, you know, things are going well for you right now. What's your relationship like with the Patriots? As you stated, you had some rocky times in Boston. It's funny because I'm a big Chris Nyland guy, who's a former Boston Bruin, Montreal Canadian, and said the same thing. You know, he feels he just stays out of trouble in Montreal. It's just a different world for him. You know, like, you know, he goes into dark places sometimes. But what's your relationship like with the Patriots? Like, can you walk in there this week or when they show up? Are you a welcome guy in their room, or do you get like a weird look from Belichick? What's your relationship with the coach like now?
Yeah, I've been back a couple times. We've had a couple of reunions. The 2001 Super Bowl team, you know, when we beat the Rams, had a reunion about a month ago. Prior to that, about 2 years prior to that, they brought back all the guys that were on all three Super Bowl championship teams. And that was the first time. That was probably back in 2013 that they did that. And that was the first time I had talked to Bill Belichick or Robert Kraft since I retired. And just so your listeners understand, I retired from the Patriots in the beginning of the 2005 season.
That's a long time.
Because of concussions. And it was, if you read my story, there was a very kind of explosive story the New York Times wrote about me, about something, an incident that happened with me and the Patriots. I got two concussions within 4 days. The second concussion I got was basically I was pressured to go back out there against doctor's orders by my head coach, Bill Belichick. And when I did that, I got a second concussion. That really kind of screwed me up there for a while. And so
did he apologize ever? Did he say, man, I didn't know it was that bad? Yeah. Did he?
Yeah. You know, but not to me personally, but I have been told that of the two power brokers in New England, you know, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, that Bill Belichick had, felt remorse, felt bad about his part in that. And I truly feel it because here's what happened. When Belichick and I, when that happened, I went toe-to-toe with him. I basically said, look, you pushed me too far. You can demote me. You can trade me. You can take away my reps, but you don't mess with my health. That's where you cross the line. And him and I got to a point where he understood that. He owned it. He held himself accountable. Now, he didn't go out there and announce it to the world. It was him and I in his office, but that was good enough for me. And then we were able to work through it, and I still played two more years with him and got two more Super Bowls. But Mr. Kraft, a whole different deal. That's unfortunate because what happened with me was when Andre Waters Andre Waters, the safety for the Philadelphia Eagles. He was kind of the first athlete, well, Mike Webster, but really the New York Times did a piece on him back in 2006. They did an autopsy on Andre Waters' brain, and it showed CTE. Okay, CTE was not discovered until then, and they discovered that there was a link between guys that play football and get multiple concussions and a brain disease that was brand new and just discovered. So I read that article and I felt compelled. I had to tell my story. And I knew when I told that story that I was probably burning bridges with the Patriots, and I was one of their guys now. You know, I was, Mr. Kraft and I were tight, you know, and I played 10 years there.
Yeah, man.
And so it had a good, you know, fan following.
I just think of you and Brewski. Like, I think of the defense. Yeah, I think of you and Teddy, man, like laying your body and sacrificing on the line.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I could not help. I could not live with myself if I didn't tell that story. And when I told my story, it was a salacious kind of story. Yeah. And indicted Bill Belichick, but it was really about a bigger picture. Here's the point of it all: what that article triggered events that honestly, I think sped up this whole entire process. So I feel good about it. I'm kind of outside the velvet ropes with the Patriots, but I'm okay with that because I feel like the impact I made is so far more important that it's worth sacrificing my relationship with the Patriots.
They can't take your rings away, and they can't take away the legacy and the memories that Pats fans and football fans have of you playing the game the way that you did. And you're right. Listen, I'm tight with Kyle Turley, one of the few guys that I actually became buddies with. And, like, he's in the music business. I was in the music sports. And, like, you know, we hung out in San Diego. I've helped him put on his shows for his band and stuff like that. And like you said, he's totally blackballed, man. Yet somebody's got to step up. And that's why I respect Ditka. Ditka's a big name. He puts his name on it. Don Shula, the Gridiron Greats. Yeah. I got your back on this, Teddy, and I wanted to ask you about this. I don't picture you as the type of guy that grew up smoking weed and smoking a bowl. You know, you're an athlete. You know, I viewed you as a type of, you know, more of a jock type. But without being stated, at this day and age, we see medicinal marijuana's strengths have been proven. And I see the NFL has said, we're looking into this, but it hasn't been proven that it helps people. Well, I'll tell you what's been proven, that pills are bad for you, that alcohol is bad for you, that mixing pills and alcohol is bad for you, that depression's bad for you. It's amazing all the things they'd advocate, but they're like, I don't know, marijuana might be too bad for you guys. What's your take on the weed thing and if it can help guys? I think it can help guys.
Hey, you have, my friend, you've nailed it. You have absolutely nailed it. That is the hypocrisy in this entire thing, okay? When you have, you have marijuana who, you know, there's a lot of studies that say it can be beneficial. It relieves pain. We all know what it can do for a lot of, you know, people who are suffering with pain, okay? It is banned by the NFL. God forbid the NFL let us use something like marijuana to help deal with the pain. A lot of guys don't like to drink alcohol. So that's an alternative kind of way for them to kind of, you know, deal with the pain, the stress. There's a psychological aspect of it too. Don't forget that. And it's a joke. It's an absolute joke because what you're saying is true. What do guys do when they can't, get what they want? They go to street drugs. They start lying to doctors. They get multiple scripts, all right, and they start getting collecting Percocet and Vicodin, and it turns right into an opioid, addiction. What if they just would stop being so gosh dang, they're obsessed and they are so, you know, stubborn about trying to set an example for all the young kids out there that want to grow up and believe football. Hey, football's family, right? That's the motto. So they're selling this propaganda BS. When it's not, that's really not how it is. Help these guys. Seriously. Stop making guys out to, you know, that smoke pot like they're the worst people. They're just trying to find out ways to try and help their pain. You know, it's kind of like human growth hormone. HGH is a banned substance in the NFL. Everything I've ever learned, and I take HGH now that I've been retired, it helps recovery. It helps me get back faster. It rejuvenates cells. Oh, but the NFL, they're not going to let you do it because they think that's a PED and that's going to lead to something else. It's such a joke and it's sad. And my friend, I'm glad that you realize that. And I think more people are getting educated and aware of it more now than they are. And I think people are watching football through a different prism. There's a lot of people that kind of, you know, feel guilty to some degree when they watch football. But I love the fact that at least people kind of know what's going on behind the scenes. Because they did it before. So more guys like Kyle Turley that speak up and have the balls and have the chutzpah and aren't afraid to take on the NFL, because a lot of guys, they don't want to, you know, that gravy train to ever end.
The current guys, though, Teddy, right? The current guys, they need to step up as well, because we all know the NFLPA, they're the biggest wusses of all of them. No guaranteed contracts. Before Upshaw was in bed with the NFL, and I'm not so sure DeMora Smith isn't as well. So...
Yep.
You know, and Kyle tells me about this with the concussions. And he goes, the league is actually easier to deal with than the NFLPA is. Yep. So, it's up to the PA as well.
I swear, you are, you know, a brother from another mother, man. I'm telling you. You're hitting all the right spots. Our union is...
Yeah, we're not mainstream, Teddy. I'll tell it like it is, man. I don't care about playing golf with anybody. I'm like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It is what it is. I'd rather tell the truth.
Yeah, no, you're just hitting it big time because, to me, our union, you know what our union did? Here's the thing. You know what the story I referenced earlier in the interview, I said, you know, I got two concussions back to back. My coach forced me out there against doctor's orders. Okay. I called my union. I called a lawyer in my union. I told him what happened. You know what he said to me? I'm not going to say his name. He's still there. He's like, well, Pat, there's really not much we can do to help you. You need to get back there within 5 days or you're going to have to forfeit your salary.
Great.
And I was heartbroken. I mean heartbroken. Couldn't believe. I felt like they turned their back on me because my story was such an indictment and it's so just egregiously horrible, bad, that he said that to me. But you know what? I tell you what, Let's go defend Tom Brady. That's my guy, okay? So don't take this the wrong way. But deflated balls, got to spend all this money on lawyers, putting, you know, defending Tom Brady's honor about deflated footballs, but they won't help guys that really need it. It is a disgrace. Whenever there's issues about concussions and a team being negligible, where's the statement from our union? It's never there.
Never.
It's a joke, man. And it's, and
they're like you said, they're more concerned with defending guys that beat their chicks up and stuff. Like, you know, like it's amazing. We can go on and on, man, Teddy. Time's flying by here, and I know you're busy. But, you know, Hollywood Henderson used to come on my show. Hollywood broke his neck playing in the NFL. He happened to win the Texas State Lottery, so they called him into the Watergate Hotel, and Bidwell and all the owners were there, and Upshaw was there. And they said, we don't think we should pay you your pension anymore because you won the lottery. And he's like, what does one have to do with the other? He went into the hallway. They offered him like a deal. Gene Upshaw told him, take the deal. And they didn't fight it. So
of course Gene did.
Yeah.
And the last thing, you know, I want to finish with this, though, at least. You know, it's the owners, they look at us like we are like robots. We are emotionless beings. They look down on us.
Yeah.
I mean, it is honestly, they just don't care. We're assets to be tossed aside. And it's sad, and it's a joke. And that's just how our ownership looks. You know, that's why I like the NBA. The NBA seems like there's a partnership between the teams and the players. You know, you see a lot of former players being head coaches.
Dude, the NBA the other day, Teddy, they were the first league. The players on their own said, yeah, we're all going to put money in for the Players Association. We're going to put money in for past players.
Yep.
Look, the NBA lets their players smoke weed. How often do you hear about an NBA player knocking someone out in a bar? You never hear about it because they're chill smoking weed in their hotel room. All right, we got to get out of here, Teddy. So tell us about your work with Low T Testosterone and give us a pick in the Super Bowl, man.
Here we go. Low T Center, okay, it's been around 3 years now, guys. Low T Center, if you're a man between the age of 40 and 60 like I am, guys, all you tough guys out there, you don't think, hey, I'm fine, you know. Look, it happens to us naturally. The older we get, we produce less and less testosterone. For 3 years, I've been going to this company. The owner, Mike Sisk, I absolutely love. I get testosterone replacement therapy protocol. I get testosterone boost every single week. I feel phenomenal. There's a lab on site. Okay, you get your blood work. The first trip you go, you know your results right then and there. I had lower than average, you know, testosterone levels for my age, and I was feeling tired. I just didn't have the physical and the mental kind of you know, stamina that I used to have. They got me on a program. I feel so much better, guys. Go check it out. Don't be tough, guy. Look, if it's not for you, it's not for you. But they'll answer all the questions. There is, for more information, guys, you can go to lowtcenter.com. That's lowtcenter.com. Here's my pick on the Super Bowl. The Patriots are winning this game. I think that offense for the Falcons is so dynamic. I think it's going to be tough to kind of keep them in check. But here's the thing. That defense for the Atlanta Falcons, they ain't seen what's coming. They've never seen anything that's coming like what the Patriots are coming with. Patriots are going to win this game. It's going to be close, but the Pats are going to win.
Teddy, I really enjoyed it, man. We could have went for the entire hour. I know you got a show to do, and we've got to get to a commercial break, but we'll definitely do this again, man. Really enjoyed the talk, man.
You call anytime, bud, okay? It's really good talking with you.
And there's Teddy Johnson, three-time Super Bowl champion and a man that tells it like it is. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Really enjoyed that conversation with three-time Super Bowl champ Teddy Johnson. But let's talk some basketball right now. And I'm not going to say there's chaos in the association, but I'll tell you what, and I told you guys, we're at the time of the year right now where players are getting tired. They've got their eye on the All-Star break around the corner. They're getting worn out. The schedule has been brutal in the NBA. Ton of back-to-backs. I think the Jazz are playing their fifth game in seven nights tonight. So NBA underdogs, 13-11 straight up. 16-8 against the spread. But we're talking big underdogs. Look, Sacramento beat Cleveland last night. Philadelphia 76ers are on a torrid pace. You know, the world's been turned upside down. LeBron's complaining. And then now the Cavaliers are complaining to LeBron. LeBron's complaining. Dwayne Wade's complaining. Butler's complaining. Everyone's complaining except us because we got Coach Nick joining us right now. What's up, Coach Nick?
Hey, what's going on, my man?
Hey, so listen, we'll cut the small talk, but it's always a pleasure, my man, breaking it down with you. So LeBron was already in a bad mood, and then they're 12-point favorites against the visiting Sacramento Kings, who aren't exactly known as being road warriors, Coach. And they go into Cleveland and beat them. Now we get reports that basically that Griffin and Lou and basically Snyder all talked to James and told him, you know, don't do this publicly. You know, we want to win as much as anybody. And they reminded him that J.R. Smith is injured. And I guess maybe we didn't realize how much of an impact J.R. Smith's absence was going to have. But, you know, you figure LeBron, I get his frustration, but he's been around long enough to understand that the entire league is top heavy. And the fact is, Daniel Snyder, who I'm not a big fan of, he spent more money in the last 3 years than any owner in the NBA. They're spending $127 million this year already.
I agree. I mean, I think what they brought in with Korver was not what they really needed. I know he kind of is a stopgap until J.R. Smith gets back, but that's not what they need. Although it was a brutal loss last night. And it's not like they needed another playmaker like LeBron was complaining about. They just needed to make a just one more free throw in regulation. They missed a ton of them.
Is it defense, Coach, their problem? Because it seems like they've lost their way on the defensive end a bit.
Yeah, the defense isn't great, and also it's Korver. His net rating in most of his lineups are terrible, and he's really not doing well. He hasn't fit in. Now, a bunch of times when they were scoring, they were on switches that he didn't know was a switch. So it's conceivable that once they get him up to speed after enough games, he'll get more natural with that and be able to understand when they want to switch, because right now you can see it where he's three steps behind trying to close out, and they're getting wide open shots. It happened last night in a crucial time. And right now, Kyle Korver is, you know, and by the way, he's shooting well from three. So he's doing what they brought him in to do, but it's a dumpster fire either way, and it's on the defensive end and in transition.
Is it too obvious to say, well, look at Dwayne Wade? Dwayne Wade already seems to want out of Chicago. The homecoming is turning sour. I thought this Bulls team even last year. I mean, you know, he was the trendiest coach, man, coming out of Iowa State, and it seemed like a good fit in the NBA and a good fit. All the Bulls, we want to, you know, we want to open things up. Yet nothing seems to be working, and we're getting to the time of the year now where people are getting frustrated. Last night was a bad loss. I had money on the Bulls last night, man. They were up by double digits, Coach. I look in and they blow the lead late against an Atlanta team that boat raced them the other night.
Right. Well, when your offense is that stagnant, there's just not a lot of room. So Wade is not getting a lot of cuts to the basket like he normally does, because there's no room to cut through. And it's not just because they don't have like shooters with Rondo out there and even Wade. It's the stagnancy of the offense. They're not moving. And it's really frustrating. And I'm actually frustrated for Hoiberg, because I know that if he had his way, they would be running offense that is spread with lots of dribble handoffs and lots of pin downs and guys sprinting across the court. But for whatever reason, over the last 2 years, he just simply hasn't done it. They haven't let him. I don't know what the answer is for that. And as a result, I think everyone's frustrated, as they should be. And it looks bad. There's a bad look the other last night, I think it was, with Jimmy Butler sort of just dismissing what Fred Hoiberg was trying to tell him on the court. They caught it on the cameras. It's not a good look at all, and I would be surprised if Hoiberg survives if they don't make the playoffs this year.
I know, and you know what? I'd be surprised. You know what'll happen? I think Hoiberg will get picked up by another NBA team, and then they'll run and gun, and they'll do well. I think
It's like they might have better. It's like D'Antoni. When D'Antoni gets to Houston, they have the players that he likes that runs the system well for him. Boom, they take off. Whereas with the Lakers, they didn't have the fit. Now, granted, I like to say that coaches should have a flexible enough system where they can run it with different players. But why try and get a square into a round peg? You know, it's simply not the kind of thing that he would want to run on with his offense and those players. I feel bad for Hoiberg, but you know, the Chicago fans haven't grown up there. They're rabid, and he's not long for that job if they can't turn this around. And I don't see it happening, and I don't see Wade wanting to stay, because there doesn't seem to be a very bright future, and he's got maybe 1 year left, maybe a year and a half, too, tops.
I wanted to get to the 76ers, but we only got a couple of minutes, and the T-Wolves are playing tonight. Another upstart team that, I don't know, have they turned the corner? They're 6-2 in their last eight games. Wiggins 31 the other night, buzzer beater. I saw them play earlier in the year in person, actually, and they were pretty discombobulated. Mm-hmm. Basically, a bunch of talented guys. Rubio just seems to be, you know, he had a big turnover late in the game the other day. You know, Rubio seems to be a little bit out of place, and it doesn't seem like Thibodeau really has figured out how to use everybody, or they're the right guys for his style. But I ask you this, but they're winning games right now. Are they winning games because of their talent only, or have the T-Wolves turned a corner? And I guess we'll sort of find out tonight, because they're actually favored against the Pacers. And if they turn the corner, this is a game they win tonight against the Pacers.
Absolutely. This is a really big key moment for them and the Mavericks, by the way, tonight as well, who we're also playing okay right now.
Yep.
And, you know, it could be a matter of thing where, you know, they are slowly and accepting Thibodeau's, you know, teachings and his style. It was not a shock to me that a young team like that would take longer to figure it out, whereas in Chicago, he had a bit of a more of a veteran club around him that would buy in quicker and already had a nice basis of understanding how the game's played. So, you know, this is a lost year for them. He's probably going to tinker with the roster as he realizes, okay, this guy is not my kind of guy. This guy's not my kind of guy. Maybe bring one of his guys in. And I would imagine that this will be the thing where they say, we really grew this year. We took our lumps, and then they'll take off next year.
All right. Unfortunately, we've got like 15 seconds left. But how about this 76ers run, man? Unbelievable.
Joel Embiid, it'll be.
All right, we're going to start off with a kind of a strange, under-the-radar college basketball game for our plays of the day. Old Dominion and Rice. Rice are putting up like 82 points per game. I think the total's a little bit low at .134. Old D are a defensive-orientated team, but if you look at recent history, like the last week and a half or so, they've been putting points up on the board, and they've been playing games into the 70s. I think the total's too low here at .134.5. Vautech in North Carolina. The Tar Heels are a national championship contender for sure, but 15 points just feels a little bit high. If you've noticed over the past week in college and the NBA, a lot of underdogs have been winning and covering and even winning outright. Give me the 15 with Vautech. We're going to go over .165. It's incredibly high. I want to take the under, but I never want to take the under. And both these teams are really putting up like a crazy amount of points. So let's go over 165. Did you say Utes or Utes? I said Utes. Give me the Utah Utes, -1 against the Ducks at tonight. Tough game, but I think this game goes over the number as well, over .143. Don't look now, man, but the Dallas Mavericks are covering numbers. They're like 6-1 against the spread in their last seven basketball games. Give me the Dallas Mavericks at +9.5 tonight. Oklahoma City back home after that long road trip. Let's go over 197 in the NHL. Leafs are 9-0-2 in their last 11 road games. That streak comes to an end tonight, and give me the Wild. They're red hot. May the winners be yours.